They kept on coming and during the day and started and bombed again. But we went to a forest to be safe. They strafed the forest with machine gun fire to make sure that the soldiers, if there's anybody around, you know, this is war, you know. Well, eventually it stopped and they occupied. Then we decided to go home, back home. This is all in that little village I told you. And in fact, the name of that little village is called Ricky. Ricky is, I don't know if you know about Admiral Rickover. Admiral Rickover is the one who invented
U-boat or submarine?
Submarine. Okay. Our submarines. He invented a submarine with atomic driven. That's Ricky. And he's from the same little village, and he called himself Rickover because of that. The name of the place is Ricky. On the way back home, I remember sitting on a wagon, and that crossroads I talked about before, there were Germans guarding it, of course. And for the first time I saw a German in my life, they were big. They were armed to the teeth, you know, threatening, very threatening people. And they stabbed with the bayonets into the wagon to see if there's anything there, some hiding or whatever. And then they let us go, and we went back home. And finally we were born. My grandfather was by himself, so we slept with him because, you know, it was we were kids. I was 16 years old, and the other two brothers were younger. There was a difference of a year and a half each, also almost 2 years, and we used to have dinner sometimes in my uncle's house, who lived across the street from my grandfather, and there was a curfew curfew, 6 o'clock was curfew, and it was quite a walk from there, to my house where we lived. So when after dinner we went to the house, and after we on the way to my house, very close to the house, was a school that we used to go to when we were kids, but at this time it was occupied by the Germans. They occupied it, and German soldiers were there. So as we went home, we were stopped by a German. And he said, "Follow me," he says. We followed him to the back, and he was ready to kill us because he said that we were late. It was the curfew that we were late. Maybe we were a minute late, maybe not. And he was ready to kill us if another German would not stop him. He would have killed all three of us. This was the first encounter with the Germans. And then, of course, there was no government, there was no order, it was chaos. You couldn't buy anything for money because money was not accepted. Nobody wanted the money, and we had three kids. We didn't have money, and we had no way how to get anything. So they were. My kid brother, who was 12 years old, and he was tiny. So he was like, he was not afraid. So he went to German, what do you call them, Gestapo, gendarmes. They were all of them not too far from us.
and he sort of made some kind of deals. I don't know how he did, whatever he did, he brought their soup home. So this is what kept us alive. My little, he was 12 years old, but small. He was no challenge or no threat, you know, to them. So, you know. And so for a while, it worked. And then, of course, a while later, the Germans decided that they want to fix up the airport, so they needed mechanics. And the mechanics, they needed carpenters, glaziers, all kinds of mechanics to maintain the airport. So all the year workers were Jews. So they hired the Jews and paid us. I mean, they didn't pay us enough to... We just about made out, and they issued their own money, and it was accepted at that time. Somehow things became a little bit more orderly, and people did accept the money. You could buy something occasionally. So, and then the real picture came in. They formed a Judenrat, which is a German, which is a Jews. They decided to have, let's say, 12 Jews who were regulating the town. So they could give them the orders on what they want. If they wanted 100 people next morning to work, they would say, give us 100 people, and they had to deliver. If they wanted gold, one day they said, we want X amount of gold. So they had to talk to the Judenrat. The Judenrat came to us. Everything went through the Judenrat, sort of. When they decided they don't like them anymore, they couldn't carry out the orders anymore, so they killed them and they installed 12 others. You know, that was the. And then, of course, after this, they made a ghetto. Within a year of occupation, they decided to make a ghetto, and a certain area of the town was a ghetto, and the other area was not. And I lived there. I lived was not the ghetto, and I had to move out. So while I was working for the Germans, in fact, I was putting glasses into something. I mean, as a glazier, installing glasses. A car came over, big Gestapo guys, and Federbusch, who's Federbusch? I said, that's me. Come on along. So he took me to the gendarme, to the headquarters. There I see my brother, my kid brother, and my uncle. My uncle said to me, what did you do? What did you do? I said, I didn't do anything. I said, why are we here? I don't know. Turned out there were two Polish boys over there, and they pointed at me. I'm the right one. They pointed at me that I am the right one. And so they let my uncle and my brother go, and they took me in, and they beat the hell out of me and started interrogating me about an underground. I had no idea what was even going on, but it turned out that these two Polacks decided to cut some from a truck, from a hangar, these rubber hoses that's connected. They cut them, and they caught them, the Germans, by cutting them, and they right away were suspicious that this was done organized by the underground, the sabotage and all that stuff. And so they asked the two Polacks, why did you cut the things? Why, what did you need it? What do you need those rubber hoses for? And they said, well, because we have to go through the ghetto when we go home, on our way home from work, and we are afraid of some of the Jews. Who are the Jews? So because they knew me, because we went to school together, so they mentioned my name. That's how the whole thing came about. And turned out they took us to a state, to another city, to a state prison. And we were there, interrogated again and again, beating the hell out of us. And finally, they let us go. 3 or 4 months or so, they let us go. While I was in that jail, what was going on there was unbelievable. At night, we heard screaming and killing people. So I was only 16, 17 years old at that point, and this is what I encountered all the time. Well, finally, they sent me home. When I came home, it was already, the ghetto was already established, and I could no longer go back to my house, and I had to stay with my aunt. My aunt had a one room only, and they were 5 or 6, and I was had to go. They had a girl about my age, and it was not a very 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 pleasant situation. So, in the ghetto, we were in the ghetto a while. And May the 5th, 1942, they decided to deport the ghetto. They gave an order that the Jews should come out to the square, to the town square. And I was working at that time at the airport. So when we heard about it, and we didn't really know what was going on, some people who worked at the airport went into town to see what was going on, and some of them had to go. They took them with them, even though they were working. And this was the first time they took 2,000 people. 2,000 people they took at that time. Children, old, young, women, men, people who were sick, who were not sick, everybody. And we never saw them again. In the meantime, we tried to find out where in the world they went to. So we found out who the Polish engineer was who drove the train. And that guy says, yes, I took them to a place called Treblinka. And I don't know what's going on over there. He says, I don't know. Then the next time I took another train to Treblinka, it's supposed to be thousands of Jews there, and there's nobody around, really. Each time I come, it's empty. What happened to them? Nobody knows. We really didn't know what happened. So that was that. Then, about a few months later, there was another deportation, and this time they took them to Sobibor. And a few weeks after that, but we had no idea what happened to them. No idea. After that, one guy came back from Sobibor, who was a friend of mine, my age, good friend of mine. We went to school together. He was very well built, tall, and he said they selected him to be one of those Sonderkommando, which helped to help the with the people taking to take them to the crematoria, from the gas chambers of crematoria. He says, you wouldn't believe this. I took my own parents. And we said to him, you're out of your mind. It can't be. We didn't believe a word he said. We thought he went crazy. We thought it's his imagination or something. We did not believe a word he said. But he said, in the morning and in the evening at the services, he said Kaddish after his parents. But still, we had no idea what he was talking about. We were in that camp. In the meantime, when they took out the first 2,000, they brought 2,000 Jews from Slovakia, from a place called Prešov. When they came, we were already in rags. This was 1942. We were already in rags after the war. I mean, the war was already since 1939. They came, and they looked like Wall Street executives, well-dressed. Madison Avenue, well-dressed, the woman and the man, the best of suits and quality, everything. And the first 2,000 Jews they took out, they had to move in into those apartments, places. As a matter of fact, I had a family by the name of Feldman moved into my aunt's where I used to stay, into her house. And this was an older couple and a daughter and her boyfriend. And I let them. In the meantime, we who were working at the airport did not sleep anymore in the ghetto because we slept at the camp. They had a camp at the same time for those people who worked at the airport, and they gave us food and all. I mean, not the best of food, not enough food, but that was a ghetto for the workers, okay? And we had to sleep there in order to get the food. So, in the meantime, those people came from Prešov, from Slovakia. They took all these places where the people already had left with the first deportation. Now they settled in and they had to start a life just like we did. They came from luxury and now they're starting a life just like we did, working for the Germans and with the beating, with the shooting and everything else. And no food. I'll never forget one particular guy who was tall. He must have been like 6'6", a young man, maybe 22, maybe 25 years old. He was tall. He was good looking. He was like a build, like unbelievable. And within 2 months, he died of starvation. So, you know, this is the kind of life as was. And then the second deportation, they were included, the people from Slovakia were included in the second deportation, but they said the Germans don't mean us, they only mean the Polish Jews. So they did not come out. The Germans went into the houses and killed them. It was such a bloodbath, I didn't see it. But people described it, and it's in my book. I have a book that was written after the war by the survivors. And the way they described that bloodbath, it was like a river of blood on the streets. That's how many people they killed, the Slovakian people. Because they didn't come out, they didn't believe that this is part of the Polish Jews. So after that, it became the ghetto. The whole town became sort of what they call Judenrein. You know what that means? Clean of Jews. No more Jews, and there were no Jews lived there anymore. Period.